Welcome to the Daily Canon Podcast.
Hello again, listeners. It's another Daily Canon Weekly Podcast. It's your host, Matthew Wade. Hello. And joining me all the way from Croatia is our podcast regular, Anita Sambol. How are you, Anita?
Hello, hello. Well, dreading the weekend already. Oh. Arsenal are playing again. Had a little break from all the Arsenal-related stuff during last week. And yeah, it wasn't that bad, I should say.
Yes, it's been a strangely cathartic week with absence of Arsenal games, which is perhaps a reflection of how things are feeling more generally at the moment. I mean, certainly, without wishing to open the Emery box at this stage, there is a great sense of apathy throughout large parts of the fan base, partly because obviously the statements that came out of the club suggest that no action is imminent, and no doubt we'll interrogate that in a little bit in due course. And it's hard to see how performances are going to take a sudden uptick. So we're all in this kind of slight holding pattern of going, okay, can they turn it around? And if they can't, how long will they take to make some kind of decision about the head coach's future? So obviously, in that respect, we're all kind of slightly in a limbo state about what is, I suppose, the dominating topic. But there has been quite a lot of other things going on in and around that, and I suppose as good a place to start as any is some of the rumours that have been swirling around the managerial position. I mean, firstly, I think the guys last week touched on the first statement that came out to the club a little bit, or the unofficial statements about Noyes and what have you. What did you make of the club's sort of clarification statement, basically saying, well, of course, we're not happy with the way things are going, etc., etc., etc.?
Well, I mean, it's basically what they would. I didn't expect anything different. You know, it seemed like, yeah, they went out to try to say something, but I didn't expect them to come out and say, yeah, the manager is poor and we should change him. I think that anyone who expected something like that has been really wrong. I really didn't like the way he said, like, making, they heard some noise and stuff. It makes people's kind of not don't really appreciate that kind of comment when there has been a lot more than just noise, if not on social media, but also inside the stadium and with poor attendances and everything. I think it's a lot more than just noise that's happening. But yeah, I didn't really expect much from them from those unofficial statements.
Well, I mean, the issue of the noise is an interesting one, because obviously the club, when it initially came out through journalists, it came out as a very sort of vague statement. So it's like, did that noise mean the fans? Did that noise mean the punditocracy, as I've heard someone call it? Did the noise mean random people on the internet? What did the noise mean? And I think a lot of people took it to mean the fans and the sort of perhaps negative attitude a lot of the fan base have towards the manager and the team's performances at the moment. But as you say, people can refer to noise as much as they like, but ultimately there would be no noise if things weren't clearly in a state of, at least for the moment, decline and underachievement, which of course is ultimately the number one thing. You know, if the team's winning every game, then the fans will quite happily swallow the fact that the football's quite dull for at least for an extended period of time. But the fact if both elements are failing, then there's going to be noise. And frankly, at this stage, it's my own view that the club should be grateful for noise, simply because if it goes on much longer, that noise will just turn into empty seats. And when it turns into empty seats, then it's time for action, because there's nothing can be done about it. You know, if you start getting to the point where, you know, the attendances at the stadium seem to be drifting off a little bit slowly, and if things don't improve over the next, you know, couple of months and no action's taken, then you're going to see those attendances get down to the 35,000 mark for league games, and then, you know, suddenly a very big stadium looks very empty. And I'm sure the club don't want to get to the stage where they have to be like Chelsea or Spurs have been, of having to advertise their tickets on posters on the tube. If that happens, then I think it will accelerate any pace of any change. But of course, as well as that, then the club made a second statement, as you say, what the hell else were they going to say? I noticed some people expressed disappointment in the club's lack of clarity, but they're in a no-win position because they can't say fundamentally everything's fine, la 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 la, because clearly that's in the face of the truth and no one's going to react well to that. But also, as you quite rightly point out, they can't just, you know, hand the manager a blindfold and a revolver with one bullet in it.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go out and say, yeah, this head coach is not working well, and without a plan B or having someone to replace you. Because, I mean, what else is there to do? If you come out as a club and say that you see that this man is not doing a good job, and then you keep him running the team and playing, I mean, it's just... I think that statement like that would come out only if and when they have a proper replacement or someone lined up to replace him.
Yeah, I mean, I think you only get a statement like that, frankly, if it's as part of a broader statement saying we thank so-and-so for his time and his efforts at the club, but we decided to move in a different direction.
You know. Yes, Arsenal would definitely do it in gloves and... Yeah. Carefully tiptoeing around it.
But just generally, as a matter of course, I mean, if you, in any job, if you publicly undermine the person doing the job, then you might as well just sack them, because you're essentially, you're, as I say, you're handing them the revolver and letting them decide what they want to do with it. But I mean, so does the club's second statement or clarification, as it is, remains a sort of semi-unofficial, but is that for you the dreaded vote of confidence, or is it not quite there yet?
Well, I think we kind of, lots of us hoped on social media especially that a change will come now before the international break. You know, it's like a logical thing to do. If you were gonna make a change, make it right now, because things are not looking well. There is plenty of time to get things moving around the club until the next match. But I think that has been a little bit built up in our minds and our imaginations. And the second statement from the club is again something completely logical, and when you look at it from the bigger perspective and from outside the club and everything that has been happening with the club and other clubs that have changed the managers after a long time, I just don't see the other way than keeping with him until the end of the season, unless something really horrible, horrible happens. Like perhaps if he gets kicked out of the Europa League in the first knockout round, and the league table and league form keep looking the same as they have so far. I think that's when they might pull the trigger, because they did mention that the main goal, the only goal for this season, is to get to the Champions League. And those things would mean that we won't get to the Champions League. And that's the only thing I think that would make them end the contract before the summer.
I mean, certainly I can't see any scenario in which he's gone before sort of Christmas, after the run of Christmas fixtures. I mean, I do see that if the next month and a half goes badly, then he might go during the January transfer window at some stage. Partly simply because the club would probably have slightly more options to address the situation then. Because after our last chat, I was thinking about this and thinking, well, there really aren't many candidates to take over. And most of those candidates don't seem a great fit for the club in terms of people who would be available now. But, you know, one of the ones that we talked about before was Luis Enrique, who I was willing to accept out of the candidates available, because I've seen things about his management which I like more than Emery's, even though he's not the most convincing candidate. But obviously he's now just retaken the Spain job, returned to his job there, following obviously the recovery from the family, from the trauma of losing their daughter. And of course, we wish the rest of the family well in that respect. And so, you're looking at who's unemployed, and the only ones we've had any noises from is once again Mourinho going, hey, I'm still here. Yeah, I had dinner with people, honest. desperately trying to get someone to give him another big job so he can get another payoff in down the line. But it doesn't seem like anyone at Arsenal's biting on that one. And of course, there is a bit more competition with the situation at Bayern Munich. And whether we like it or not, Bayern are going to be a bigger draw for most managers and coaches than us, because let's face it, they get to win the league every season in Germany. You know,
Champions League.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they just sacked their manager who won them the league last season. So, yeah. That tells you not just the level of expectation, which is a challenge, but it also tells you about how hard it is to truly fail with that club. Partly because they've got bigger resources than everyone in Germany by a country mile, and because they keep strengthening by buying up all the top young German players, except for the ones that Dortmund can get out of their clutches.
They said that they won't find a new manager until the summer.
Caretaker manager. Yeah. Indeed.
So in summer might even be even bigger competition.
But of course, there's more likely to be more decent coaches out there looking for a job by the summer. And also, for instance, if you wanted, say, Ten Hag out of Ajax, or you wanted, for sake of argument, Brendan Rodgers out of Leicester, whatever, they're not going to leave those clubs now, because they've all got, the kind of managers we want, for the most part, are currently in positions to achieve things of note with their clubs. So the only way you're going to get someone now is either if they're a considerably smaller club or a club that's massively underachieving. But then if they're massively underachieving, why would we want that coach? And if it's a considerably smaller club, then obviously there's a risk involved in that. And if you're going to take that risk, then you're back onto discussions about Arsenal DNA and the Mikel Arteta stories and what have you, which again takes you back to the end of the season.
It's a vicious circle,
Matt. Yeah, you could say that, yeah. I mean, just on the subject of Arteta, obviously that story won't die, but there's been relatively recent quotes. I'm not sure when they came, but they've been dragged up today from Per Mertesacker talking about saying, "I was his vice captain at Arsenal and he trusted me. I was by his side during team meetings and we had a great bond. I'd love to work with again, a top guy." So so Arteta's internal PR system is already kicking into gear. And there really isn't that many other names out there that seem that appealing. I mean, obviously we've previously talked about Massimiliano Allegri, but it's all totally quiet on him. There's no rumours of him going anywhere at all. And he did say he's going to take a year out, and he seems to be sticking to that. And
Luis Enrique just got his old job back.
Exactly. So that option's off the table. And then you're looking, in terms of people that we're aware of, that we've heard of, that we know something about their level of ability, obviously there's a lot of those who are unemployed at the moment are part of the kind of the usual managerial merry-go-round of people who keep getting jobs, but you wonder how. even one of our left-field options who is on the previous shortlist has gone, because obviously Thierry Henry's taken over at Montreal, isn't it? Montreal Impact.
Yeah.
One of the stranger names from the MSL. Montreal Impact. But of course, it wouldn't have made a lot of sense for Arsenal to take a chance on Henry, given his one slightly abortive managerial experience at Monaco, despite the mitigating circumstances surrounding that. So, who else is out there that seems like a change that could be viewed as anything other than a short-term option?
There have been rumours going around. Everyone here in Croatia asked me, is Niko Kovac coming to Arsenal? They have read some, I think it was 90 Minutes or some dot publication who published some rumours, an article or so, and all Croatian media wrote about it, because I mean, they obviously have like a alert when someone mentions anyone from Croatia.
Yeah.
They instantly all write the same articles. So even my dad asked me, if Kovac is coming, that he read on Teletext. He still reads Teletext, so he obviously, as you mentioned, he did win the league with Bayern last season and did okay in Champions League, beat Spurs this season in Champions League.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not sure I would.
I quite like Kovac as a coach. I don't think he's the ideal fit. I mean, football under Kovac would undoubtedly be more exciting than it is under Emery, but we'd probably be defensively even worse, but we'd probably score more goals. You know, I mean, his record, was it Frankfurt who was that before he went?
Yeah.
And obviously he instituted what they've then built on since of playing very attacking football. But as we've seen from Frankfurt, as you know, in the Europa League this season, but also in the last couple of years, and we've seen at Bayern over the last 15 months, his teams do tend to be quite open at the back. Which is great for the neutral, but I mean, until fairly recently, we've had the best part of a decade of being great for the neutral. So I mean, I would, if it was a straight choice between his coaching and Emery's coaching, I'd take Kovac's simply because I think it would be more fun to watch. But I think in terms of the net result, you probably wouldn't get a great deal of difference, and so it sort of would seem a bit like a horizontal move. And then obviously if you bring in a new manager, you can't just give them a 6-month contract unless it's Solskjaer, and then you're going to find yourself tying yourself to them later.
There's one more Croatian manager that hasn't been linked, but one I like more than Kovac, it's Slaven Bilic.
Yeah, well, I mean,
he's doing really well with West Brom.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly rehabilitating his reputation with a team that has underachieved for a long time. I mean, I like Bilic, and I think he's a decent coach, but the one thing that concerned me about Bilic is, with both the national team of Croatia and particularly with West Ham, you know, when things were going well, he was great. You know, the teams were playing great football. He was charming. He was entertaining. But when the form went downhill, it seemed he didn't know how to address that collapse. I think he's great at getting teams playing fantastically, but when something breaks, I mean, we saw it towards the end of the time, particularly at West Ham, he kind of looked like a broken man. And I found it sort of quite alarming how much, you know, both he and, as an extension of his own feeling, the team just seemed to drop off totally like a stone. And I think at the competitive level that the Premier League is, I don't think the Arsenal have a strong enough squad in terms of character, in terms of experience, in terms of leadership. That would be my concern. I think whoever is going to be next manager of Arsenal either needs to be a really simple, kind of, dare I say it, Bobby Robson-esque, feel good, everyone loves him type, or someone who is like a massive force of personality leader, because I see, you know, we've got the same issues of a lack of on-pitch leadership as we've had for years at the club. And that was kind of okay for a while under Wenger, because he was like the spiritual leader in a lot of ways. But when you don't have someone fulfilling that role in the managerial role, I don't think we've got the players to make up for that. You know, you've got a couple that showing signs they may get there one day, but there's so certainly no one that stands out in that way. So I'd really be looking for someone who brought that as a key component.
Yeah, I agree.
Speaking of certain things, I noticed that we're starting to get the Wenger in signs. whether they were actually real signs or whether they were just mock-ups, I don't know. But there was even cartoons about it in the French press. About Arsenal fans wanting Wenger back. But of course, having not managed to secure a top managerial job, he's got another new job, hasn't he?
Yeah, brand new, really new, made just for him, and at FIFA, the Global Football Development, something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, basically, he's like, all credit to him, but he's basically trying to be like the one good guy in FIFA.
Definitely. I think that role is definitely made for him, and don't really, I mean, all the feelings and emotions outside, everything that he has done for football in general, not just for our club, but in general, I think that there's no better person than him to be in charge of that massive role.
I have to admit, though, seeing photos of him sort of shaking hands with Gianni Infantino did make me feel a bit sick in my mouth.
Imagine how he felt.
Well, it was a bit like seeing an ex kind of cuddling up to someone that you viscerally dislike.
Well, yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to bite your tongue and take the job and try to do the best that you can, and perhaps, you know, that's the start of something new, you know?
We could only hope. Well, I'm just minded to think. I mean, I think it's just as well that Wenger's as old as he is and basically doesn't need the job and therefore can kind of do what he wants to do, and if they get rid of him, fuck it, what does he care? Because otherwise it'd be a bit like the old Jack Nicholson quote from as the Joker from the old Tim Burton Batman movies, which was, what was it, if you dance with the devil doesn't change, the devil changes you. Because he had the line, have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight, and then someone else made the reference elsewhere. But yeah, yeah, it's interesting to see how that will develop. But, you know, we have to remain optimistic. I mean, certainly it'll just make a nice change having someone in one of those roles who actually knows something about, you know, football as opposed to just the business of football. So that
yeah, and the development in general. I mean, how many players did he find and bring up in the game, and not only at Arsenal, but, you know, all those that he kind of like missed, but other clubs have found, he definitely had an influence on that as well. So
yeah, and of course all the players at Monaco as well, like, I mean, George Weah still speaks about him as if he's a father, and Lilian Thuram and others that came from relatively nowhere. I think at one stage he had Djorkaeff quite early on in his career. So, you know, he certainly has a very global view of football, which I think fits well into FIFA's vision. I mean, it'll probably end up doing some things that piss off some of the European press because it'll give some, you know, some extra kudos to some third world country or something that doesn't have a great football tradition. But, you know, I personally think those are the kind of things we have to embrace.
Well, I mean, FIFA are doing that, something like that with Qatar. Well, it's obviously not a third world country, but it goes with the football tradition and everything.
Well, I'm hoping that anything that Wenger is involved in is slightly better thought out than basically being a massive PR coup for a very dubious regime with dodgy working practices, breaking all kinds of international laws. But let's not open that particular box too much, otherwise I'll be back onto the international campaign for human rights people and getting them to come on and do another special, which we might have to do anyway at some stage to get an update. I mean, that's what's a rat swirling around in terms of potential managers, potential coaches, ex-managers. Obviously, there's still people talking about Freddie Ljungberg, but, you know, one of the things is, does Freddie Ljungberg even want to be the interim manager of Arsenal? You know, I mean, I don't know if I was in his shoes at this. I mean, yes, you'd have the option of, you'd be instantly more popular than Emery, but would this be the best time, particularly so, as he's still relatively early into his coaching career? Does he even have ambitions to be a manager at this point in his career? We don't know these things. And I think a lot of people project what they want onto others without necessarily considering what the other's opinions might be on the subject.
I mean, I think it's a normal thing to do, especially as a football fan. You expect something, you hope for something, you want for something, and then, yeah, you get disappointed when it doesn't happen, or it isn't, the facts aren't aligned with what you have thought.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we all wished and hoped that Thierry Henry would be a great manager and that he will, you know, do well, come back, and etc., etc., and it didn't work out for him just yet, but, you know.
Well, early days, he's got his chance to try. And it sounds like, you know, Montreal are a club that have been very choppy and changey, but it seems like some of their senior club hierarchy want to see a bit more of a long-term vision bit in place. So maybe there's an opportunity for him to really develop his philosophies longer term. And obviously the situation in Monaco was weird because, A, he was in his first managerial job suddenly operating at a high level, and by all accounts is rubbing people up the wrong way by being as demanding as a coach as he had been as a player. But that Monaco team was an absolute state. I mean, the fact is they'd sacked Jardim earlier in the season, despite the fact he'd been this incredibly successful manager with them, because the doors and the wheels had fallen off. And then they, you know, most of the time that Henry was there, he basically had two-thirds of his senior players injured for quite a long. So he was having to play like teenagers all the way through the defence and what have you. And some of those young players that he blooded have gone on and progressed since then. So certainly some of the players who were there at the time seemed to say supportive things. So there's hope for him yet. No, I don't think we should hold our breath for any return as an Arsenal manager, given that at this stage he's behind both Arteta and Patrick Vieira in the queue.
Yeah.
Patrick Vieira, who's obviously doing okay at Nice. Lots of people talking about, oh, Nice not doing very well. They're like 13th in Liga. But Liga is so compact at the moment that they're like 3 points off fifth or fourth or something like that. It's like bonkers league at the moment. To be fair, the Premier League outside the now top four is very, very compact. I mean, Arsenal, you know, are not in a bad position if you look in their position place, but in terms of points, they're not that far off relegation points either, as both Spurs and Man United can testify as well.
Yeah, thankfully for that. I mean, no matter how bad we are, how bad things are looking, you can always look behind you and see Spurs and United as well.
So, I mean, just before we completely move on from, you know, managerial talk, obviously we've talked about the likelihood of anything happening to Emery anytime soon, but we have to mention that this is, you know, Arsenal's worst Premier League record after the first 12 games since the mid-90s, in the season where George Graham got sacked, I think. And certainly it is comfortably the worst in the last 5 years. We're 5 points below our 2017 low, with only 17 as opposed to 22 points. And we have a minus goal difference after 12 games.
Yeah, that's just awful.
I think the last time that happened may have been in that one season in the mid-90s, or I may even be wrong about that. It may even been sometime in the early 80s or even earlier. I mean, it really is quite shocking in that respect.
I've seen some that 7 a.m. kickoff on Twitter. He made a projection of points.
Oh God!
Did you see that?
No, but I normally do read all his stuff, but.
Yeah, if it keeps going as we did so far, there's no way to get top four.
I mean, just looking at the points total for the games played. I mean, if we're 17 after 12 games, that means 36 games, 51 points. You're looking at a maximum of like 54 points.
Yeah.
Which is,
I think it was 54 or 58, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, which is fair. There's no beating around the bush. I mean, that's just shit, and is not acceptable for a club of this budget and size. I just wanted to talk, very briefly about some of the other issues that may further complicate things for Unai Emery. I mean, obviously, we've got the issues about whether Aubameyang wants to renew his contract. So far, it's all very quiet on that front. And then talking further about Aubameyang, we obviously had the story about him reacting on his social media, on Instagram, to allegedly stories about him being all chummy with, is it Troops from Arsenal fan, or AFTV, because it has to call itself now for legal reasons.
That was just, I mean, he loves to use social media, especially Instagram stories. He's constantly posting something there, including the videos with the mentioned man Troops. I don't know what his real name is.
Neither does anyone else. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that reaction was a bit odd. I mean, I didn't expect it to happen, but somehow you understand when you look at the type of player he is, the man on social media as well. So it felt like natural for him to react after the reaction he had when that Borussia Dortmund president called him out as well.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the first question is, do we believe that it was about the club saying he couldn't speak to this guy or couldn't or shouldn't fraternize with this guy? And if we do believe that, do we believe the club was justified in trying to do that?
Well, I'm really conflicted when it comes to this, because on one side you have, you know, the freedom of speech and you can hang out with anyone who you want to, because I mean it's your privilege, your freedom, anything. It would be silly to have a club tell you who you can hang out with or who you cannot. And on the other hand, I mean, we all know how they are, who they are, what they did in the past, what they are still doing today. And not only do we know, but the players know, obviously. Bellerin and others who have had some interactions with them, not positive before. So I'm really torn. I don't think that club, you know, went out to say him, yes, sorry, please don't hang out with him anymore. But I wouldn't be so shocked if players like Bellerin and perhaps Ezu or someone mentioned something, you know, like, oh, I've seen that they are not good guys, something like that. I'm really torn when it comes to that.
I mean, there were some people even suggesting that that Aubameyang was doing that partly as a ploy to avoid taking personal heat himself. But personally, I think that's very unlikely. I can't imagine that he would cozy up to anyone just because for fear of criticism, particularly not when it damages his relationship with his teammates. I think that he's just someone, he is who he is, and either you like it or you don't like it, and frankly, you know, if you don't like it, you can go jump fuck yourself. I mean, that's kind of his attitude to life, really.
Yeah, he seems like a genuinely good guy and friendly and loves to hang out with lots of people, especially from his social media, so you could understand it from that point of view.
Yeah, and of course, you know, if, you know, you're, whether it be any of us or whether it be someone from AFTV, you know, ultimately they've got a little bit higher profile than we do, but essentially we're all motivated primarily by being Arsenal fans, and therefore if there's a chance you've got to meet and hang out with a player who's also got an engaging personality, you're probably going to jump at the chance. And I'm sure that Mr. Troops, whatever his actual name is really nice to Aubameyang, because why the hell wouldn't you be? Because Aubameyang's a fun guy. He, the Troops, for better or worse, is an Arsenal fan, you know, has very strong opinions. But I personally don't have a problem with him if he has the opportunity to have a friendship with an Arsenal player. Great, go. I mean, you know, anyone who's listened to this before knows that I'm no fan of AFTV, and I think that they've turned what should have been a very positive platform for both the club and Arsenal fans into something much more cynical for money-making and self-aggrandizement. But, you know, let he without sin cast the first stone. I can't guarantee that I would stay entirely true on my moral compass with the same opportunities presented to me. I'd like to think so, but I can't say that with certainty. But personally, I don't have any problem at all with Aubameyang having some friendly relationships with these guys. Yes, obviously there is the issue that it might cause some friction with teammates, but then of course, you know, one guy from the AFTV group cannot represent all of them.
And when you look at some people, Ezu has been hanging out with.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whatever we think of AFTV, genocide's not on their agenda yet. So, so all props to Robbie and that lot. You know, you haven't been responsible for large numbers of dead people. So, yeah, on the evil friends list, it's fairly low down the pecking order. So yeah, I mean, I personally, you know, I certainly hope the club hasn't done anything beyond someone saying, you know, just be careful with this because they, you know, they might use your profile for their own benefit and it might cause some friction with your teammates. But you know, given that the club's external communication has been so appalling over the last 2 or 3 months, it wouldn't be surprising if some of their internal communication is also a bit skew-iff. So we've got that issue, and then also there's another thing that's brewing up is obviously what's going on with Lucas Torreira. with lots of stories that
he wants to go home
to back to Italy, with rumours that AC Milan or even Atletico Madrid are interested in buying him. You can see why, and you can see why he might be tempted to leave, given the way he's been utilised. And of course, the statements coming out from his agent this week are quite telling, which is his agent Pablo Bentancur. Of course, he's talking to Calcio Mercato, so take of that what you believe, because we know that the Italian presses can be a little unreliable. But he says, I must say that the change of role has penalised him sharply. He is no longer at ease, and we hope that things can change. He says he's not unhappy with the way he's been treated, saying he's thankful for the chance he's been given in England. We have no problem with Arsenal, but only words of thanks. Arsenal's allowed Lucas to compete in the Premier League. He's always shown great confidence. Clearly the interests of Torreira are all right, especially by Spanish clubs, but I've never sat down with any club to talk about his transfer. This is the great respect we have for the Gunners and general manager Raul Sanyehi. No mention of the head coach, which is no great surprise given that Torreira's usage this season seems to be both counterintuitive against the players' greatest strengths and giving him less playing time, so I'm guessing it's no surprise he's going to be getting any love.
But yeah, I mean, he has again been the man of the match in the last night.
Yeah, set up
in his preferred position.
Yeah, set up a goal for Uruguay again.
Yeah.
So that's another problem that's brewing for the manager.
I don't see him going back to AC Milan, because right before we started the recording, I read that they are hoping to get Rakitic on loan in January, but are afraid they might not be able to afford it.
Yeah, I mean, Milan have already made an agreement with UEFA once to postpone their FFP to try and get, you know, they've already bent the rules once to see if they can get in the Champions League. And if they don't make the Champions League this year, and they keep him spending more money, they're going to be fucked.
And they won't get Champions League. I mean, they are really in bad situation.
No, they've actually not been playing well at all this year. They're a squad of very, very talented players, but not many absolute top draw players. Lots of players that would be really good members of a better team or a better squad, but not enough who can actually be the leaders of a team at that level, really, despite having spent a stupendous amount of money in the last few years.
Yeah, they got Rebic from Frankfurt, who has been really good in Frankfurt, and he doesn't get to play at all at Milan.
I know, it's great, particularly as he left Frankfurt slightly under a cloud because of the move to Milan. But so it seems like even Gazidis is working his magic once more. Boom, boom. So we've got the Torreira situation brewing. And obviously there was a tiny story about Bellerin, which seemed to be basically his agent kind of saying, well, there's no story here, but, you know, if anyone with a fuck ton of money wants to give me a call, that seemed to be what that vibe was about.
One circle of hell for football agents. I mean, they stir up so much shit every single day.
But I mean, I suppose one could argue it's part of their job. But yes, as someone who works in an industry which is entirely dependent on agents, I shouldn't talk about it too much. But let's just say it's of no coincidence that I'm currently represented by an actors' cooperative where we work together to represent ourselves. But that's another matter. And then again, you know, the worst thing, I guess, is that from the Arsenal Emery perspective is that we're in our friendly run of fixtures now. So, I mean, one can only hope that the international break has allowed a slight recharge, because this team needs to turn things around in a hurry if he's going to keep his job, both in terms of results, but also in terms of a shift in approach. Shift in approach back to what we were doing in pre-season. But anyway, more about that another time. So, there's quite a lot of different angles of things which are providing a bit of pressure at the moment. There's also, I suppose, we should probably talk a bit more broadly. Was there anything from the various international fixtures that leapt out for you before I talk about anything?
Torreira, as already mentioned, who was again really good for his team in his natural position.
Yeah, who would have thought it?
Yeah, I think Nicola Pepe played as well and had a significant role in his matchup too.
Obviously, Lacazette still doesn't get picked for France, but then he's struggling for fitness at the moment anyway, so you wouldn't necessarily expect him to.
Yeah, and Guendouzi got picked thanks to injury as well, yeah. But he was on the bench, I think. Didn't even get to play.
We saw Reece Nelson played and scored for the under-21s. In a game in which also Joe Willock played and Eddie Nketiah played. So, it was a fairly routine victory. I think it was away at Albania, I think that's right. where it was quite funny because there was Man United fans sharing a clip of like when England are counter-attacking and Nelson plays probably the wrong pass out to Mason Greenwood on the flank rather than to the guy breaking through on the left. And all these United fans are kind of slagging him off, and there's a couple of people showing clips, refraining to show the rest of the clip that shows in the cross was put back in the middle and then Nelson scores. So it was this kind of great example of someone being stupid and rubbish without mentioning that it was a pre-assist that led to the person playing the pass scoring a goal. But anyway, parochial football fans and all that.
Granit Xhaka scored yesterday.
Granit Xhaka scored yesterday against the mighty Gibraltar.
Yeah, and they qualified for Euros. He seemed really, really happy on his social media posts.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, I guess if you're not very happy at your club, but you're captain of your country and your country's doing well, you might as well be happy. I mean, what do you think, just before we go elsewhere in international stuff, what do you think to the stories going around that Xhaka might not play for Arsenal again and will probably be encouraged to leave in January?
Again, to Milan?
yeah, who are going to be getting 16 midfielders on loan if they can afford the wages of any of them.
I mean, they would... My favorite rumor when it comes to transfers is he is house hunting in the city in Milan. That's just that's next to his cousin liked transfer rumor on Instagram or something like that. I'm not sure. I mean, I would be really sad if that's the truth, that he played his last match for Arsenal, because as listeners already know, I don't mind him, and I think he's a really good player. And as we have seen in the last few matches, he does a lot in midfield that many people keep forgetting and that just think of the bad things that he does.
Yeah, and also, one can't help thinking if he was actually played in a midfield system that was actually set up to cover his deficiencies and lend itself to his strengths, it might be slightly more effective. Like, I don't know, just the fact that he clearly played his best football for the club in the first half of last season in a midfield two alongside Lucas Torreira, and yet we haven't seen that since. It's just like fucking mind-boggling. And for me, without going on for Emery train again, there's so much of that situation with Xhaka which comes squarely down to the coach using a player badly, making him captain knowing that it was going to be unpopular, even though I think he probably was the right choice to be captain, all things considered, but then making that situation worse by prevaricating, and then they're kind of letting it be leaked out there that it was a group decision, it just shows a total lack of understanding of how people, British football fans and fans of British clubs with that tradition, are going to read things. Because in some of the countries, yes, the captaincy, having multiple captains and the captaincy isn't as big of an issue, but for our big clubs, and particularly in Britain, the club captain is a massive thing. And it's also a bit of an issue about how it's been framed, because it seems like, Xhaka has been the team captain of the players, but he hasn't really been put in a position to be proper club captain. You compare it to the way that maybe someone like Arteta or Mertesacker, they were, in terms of a broader captaincy role, were immediately given those roles and then were immediately visible, which didn't really happen with Xhaka, which makes you think, did they know that it was going to be unpopular? Were they too frightened to do it? Was it just that the coach doesn't understand what the captaincy means in England? A whole range of stuff going on there. And of course, the the slight, you know, the way that Emery would have slightly throw, you know, Emery had to kind of say that Xhaka was wrong, but the way he did it was so blunt after the event, it totally threw Xhaka under a bus as well. And of course, there's rumours going around that, you know, actually that Emery had spoken to someone else about being captain before he'd done his group poll and then spoken to Xhaka, but again, now Aubameyang's captain, but Emery had also spoken to someone else. And so, you know,
it's not a nice picture.
Yeah, we don't know the full truth of any of it, but there's so much coming out that it can't all just be smoke that doesn't have any fire around it.
And everything is a mess.
yeah, I'm not gonna disagree with you there.
And we have Southampton next, who are also in a mess, which obviously means that they will win.
Well, I mean, it is at our place, which does give you some hope. Obviously, our record away at Southampton is absolutely awful, but we are at home against the worst Southampton team since they got promoted. There has been an international break and an opportunity to work with a number of the players who haven't been on international duty. So, you know, I mean, we know not to expect too much at this stage, but it's one of those games that, even with the level of performance the team has been putting in this season, we should still be confident of getting something out of that game. He says, trying to convince himself.
If not that, we can always go watch the ladies' team.
Well, yes, who are still kicking ass, having won the North London Derby 2-0 with goals from Kim Lippen.
Yeah, I loved all the posts after that. North London is red. Even Adidas posted it on Twitter.
Yeah.
That was just amazing.
For shizzle, yep. And there were also quite a lot of, there was people, someone saying on Twitter that maybe the @Arsenal handle should just be for the women's team, and they should have @Arsenal_men, given that's sort of the level of performance and priority is at the moment. Certainly the men's team are doing their best to grow the support for the Arsenal women at the moment, so all power to them. Obviously, Sylvain gave us a bit of an update on the women's team a couple of weeks ago, and since then, as I say, there's been the North London Derby, which was quite a comfortable win in the end, at a record women's Super League crowd at the new Shite Hot Lane, which I'd quite enjoyed people bitching about on Twitter during the week about how difficult it was to get to. People who hadn't been there before suddenly going, oh God, it's a bloody nightmare, isn't it? It's like, yes, yes, and it's in Tottenham as well, for added grim points. Just adding even further to the more bad news for Emery column, obviously this week we've seen more clarification of the stories around Laurent Koscielny's departure and the odd bit of sniping from the sidelines from Henrik Mkhitaryan.
You know, I really love taking a break and missing most of this stuff.
Well, I'm sorry for bringing you back on a podcast, Anita. Did you actually get to see the Koscielny stuff? Because I think the original article was published on The Athletic. It was one that had been put together by James McNicholas, or at Gunnerblog, as he's more commonly known.
What did he say this time?
Well, it was basically talking about how Koscielny was... it wasn't exonerating Koscielny, but talking about how Koscielny was unhappy about his usage, being rushed back, thought it risked more injury, thought the way that he was being expected to train also risked more injury, and he just thought that, you know, the decision seems as though it's still mostly down to family and his future, but his decision to leave Arsenal was made much easier for him because of the way he was utilised, and how it felt it, A, put him in a position where he couldn't perform at the right level, and B, was going to shorten his career, what's left of it, which is just more good PR when the manager needs it. And then, of course, Henrik Mkhitaryan talking about having to build play with the defensive midfielder under Unai Emery's system. And the worst thing about that is you're like, yeah, that's true, actually. I mean, I don't know if you've got anything to say about those, or shall I just swiftly move on?
Move on, please.
Okay. Well, swiftly.
I did remember last week someone retweeted something about Mkhitaryan, and I was just like, yeah, he's on loan. We didn't actually sell him, so.
And he's going to have a year in his contract left after this loan period.
Oh my God.
So Henrik might be back under a new coach next summer.
Oh yeah, exciting.
like a new signing.
Elsewhere in more international fixture-related things, Bukayo Saka scored for England under-19s with a nicely taken goal with his right foot, cutting in from the right edge of the penalty area, so he got a nice goal. And Miguel Aziz, a young kid extraordinaire, scored a long-range goal for the England under-18s in a 4-4 draw at the weekend. A game in which also Arsenal under-18s striker Sam Greenwood got scored a penalty. So it was a 4-4 draw with Norway, which is there we go. And certainly for those of you who aren't as familiar with the youth setup as some spanner like me, two very interesting players. Sam Greenwood is... It's not exactly sure what his best position is. He sort of moves between a sort of number 9 and number 10, but also plays a bit out wide. More of a technical player than a speed-based player. And Miguel Aziz is very much a deep-lying playmaker who can push forward with effect. In terms of a player type, he's a bit like a slightly more powerful Mikel Arteta type player, I guess, in terms of thinking of someone that might be an immediate Arsenal comparison. And certainly the first player of that ilk we've produced in the youth teams in quite some time. Now, Miguel Aziz is only 16 and Sangaru is only 17, so we can't read too much into their long-term futures, but certainly Aziz is the sort of, I suppose, the most highly touted young player in that age group, who is sort of sharing that with a young lad called Yunus Musa, who then decided to not sign a scholarship with Arsenal and bugger off to Valencia, having done very well in the under-18s last season as a 15, 16-year-old, which is disappointing. But, yeah, so there's two players to look out for coming through the system. And elsewhere, talking about youth players outside of the international fixtures, the under-18s got a draw recently with Fulham just before the international break, a 2-2 away draw. But probably more interesting for those who are really interested in drilling down, following Eddie Nketiah, obviously there's Flo Balogun scoring lots of goals in the Arsenal youth setup, and then below Flo Balogun there's not been anyone totally prolific as a number 9 in the under-18s this season, hence the reason that position has been rotated. But there's someone coming up from the under-16s who's been banging goals in at a ridiculous rate, a young striker called Kayon Edwards. That's K-H-A-Y-O-N Edwards. It's an unusual spelling. But I've seen some clips of him, and he's very much out the Flo Balogun, Eddie Nketiah mould. Quick, good finisher off either feet, very good movements. And there's a few... Yeah, a few exciting players coming up. That next group, the current under-18s team, has some people who are breaking into it who are quite exciting, like Aziz, and some others who it's touch and go whether they're going to get offered full professional contracts. But the under-16 team has some great young players in it, despite the departure of Yunus Musa and the shock decision that a young lad who's Dutch Ghanaian English called Malcolm Ebiwei. Ebiowe, who was actually in one of the pre-season Arsenal videos about young players, is not being offered a scholarship, basically seemingly due to disciplinary issues, which seemed to be totally odds of his previous persona. But there are still lots of other exciting young players. Charlie Patino came from, I think, Luton a few years ago with a very high reputation. He's a creative ball player. Mexican Marcelo Flores, whose sister plays for the Arsenal women's youth reserve team and has been doing well there. He's an exciting wide player, lots of goals in him. Pedro Virginia, goalkeeper, I suspect must be related to João Virginia, the goalkeeper we had who went to Everton. And Omari Hutchison, who's a... I think there's loads of YouTube videos of him as like an 8-year-old dribbling past everyone. So he's been highly thought of for a while. And also they've been already offered scholarship contracts for captain at level Taylor Foran, who's a big, strong centre-half. And a few others, including Edu's son, Luigi Gaspar, who is freshly arrived from Brazil. So there's a few names to look out for later, lower down the food chain. Just thinking anyone else who's interested in the youth system, There's Trey Coyle, who's been around for a good while, who's starting to make an impact on the 23s, a little bit behind what was originally thought of as his trajectory, as he was so promising as a sort of 15, 16-year-old, but the mixture of injuries, etc., have stopped him really kicking on. And Tyrese John-Jules has returned from injury and scored in the Leasing.com Trophy away at Cambridge United in just before the international break. So there's a few little bits and bobs going on there that may be of interest. The loan player situation is still a bit mixed. Sadly, William Saliba has picked up another injury at Saint-Etienne, having played a couple of games and been absolutely outstanding. Has then picked up an injury, a metatarsal, which will thankfully is an injury that people tend to recover totally from, but will keep him out for a while yet. Eddie Nketiah's got a bit of an injury at the moment, but obviously he played in the international break, so he should be back for Leeds hopefully soon, just as he was in danger of getting a first team selection. And Georgie Osei-Tutu is on loan at Bosham, has got back into the team there, so that's something, because it was starting to look like that loan spell had gone a bit awry for him. So that's a little bit of a youth roundup.
Basically, if anyone is frustrated with the first team, there are a lot of positives among the youngsters and the reserves
and the women.
Definitely watch them. And the women, of course, obviously.
Exactly. And there's been a little bit of a story from the Arsenal's head of development, which is sort of a position below stroke alongside Per Mertesacker, but he's basically involved in the youth coaching, and he had a interesting little quote that he came today when he was interviewed by Transfer Market. That's MARKT, the website that hopefully some people will have seen before. And it just says one thing, which I think is worth reading out loud and sharing because I think it's of interest, which is, why are clubs owned on a world-class level only for a period? Because there will be rebuilding to phase after time. New players from other clubs come in, and these players need time to settle in. If I take youth players instead of expensive new signings, there may be one or two mistakes more, but they have the advantage of non-verbal communication. Because they played together in the youth setup for years, they know how the other works, especially about patterns of movements. In the end, the rebuilding phase is significantly shorter. And I think that's a very logical thing that we can all kind of get on board with. He also goes on to talk about how players don't really pay attention to what the crowd's doing on the pitch, and actually a real team should help coach each other on the pitch, because they can't really even understand what the coach is shouting from the sideline half the times. So you need players that can also perform that role on the pitch. And given, you know, that's obviously the model that we're going for as a club, it's, you know, it's just a little interesting to get a tiny bit more insight into what some of the thought process is. And of course, it does make sense. If you've been playing together since you were 12, you know each other's games better than if you've just met. I mean, I don't know if what else there is to talk about on the Arsenal front. I mean, there is one bit of frivolous news, but I just want to save that until the very end, because obviously we've got a fixture coming up at the weekend, as you mentioned, the Southampton game. Do you want to give us a prediction scoreline?
Okay, you convinced me, Matthew, with your preaching before about our home game and everything after the international break and everything, so I'm going to go with the win.
Ah.
Let's go with 3-1 this time.
I reckon 2-0. I think the chance of us scoring three with our first team is still fairly limited. but I think we might get a clean sheet, because Southampton, apart from set pieces, have been pretty poor in the attacking third this season.
They do have Shane Long, don't forget about that.
Ah, yes. Well, I suppose he hasn't scored... Well, he's only scored like once in a year or something, so he's bound to have some chance. But, you know, he hasn't been playing for them that much, so so perhaps... We'll
coming
see.
From bench in 65th minute to score.
Don't...
You can see it.
Let me dream. and then obviously on Thursday it's straight back to Europa League time at home against Frankfurt.
There have been some match tickets problems there.
Yeah, well, isn't it that we have to have reduced amount of tickets because of the problems last time there was a German team visiting the Emirates?
Yeah, they're not allowing all members to buy tickets, no family and friends options or anything. Yeah. And anyone caught selling their tickets to a Frankfurt fan will be banned.
Well, I mean, that's fair enough. But it does strike me as a UEFA overreaction. It's they can be quite draconian about this, but it's amazing how much racism it takes before they'll do anything. But that's another issue. But actually, on that front, I did say I really enjoyed some of the stories in the lead up to the most recent England game.
Kosovo.
Where they played away in Kosovo, about basically how everyone in Kosovo that anyone would listen to was making a massive thing about how welcoming it would be and how there wouldn't be any racism and, you know, how they completely reject that and how basically really rolling out the red carpet to England as a football team, which obviously is, you know, is always going to endear the English press to you if you treat us like we're something special. But also is, I think more generally, is a really interesting approach, actually. I mean, I suppose it helps that the game had lost its significance as Kosovo's loss to the Czech Republic meant they couldn't qualify, which is a shame because in what lovely football they played. Does extending the arm of friendship help diffuse potential situations? I don't know. But it's just something that, sort of caught my attention, not just because of the English press enjoying it, but also just because it's sort of a philosophical difference, which might be worth considering more broadly. But anyway, all about building bridges. As I keep banging on about how we should sack the coach. Hypocritical? Yes, I'm a football fan. Get over it.
Kosovo are at least playing nice football, as you said.
Yeah.
Although, I am a reason.
Well, indeed. Although they lost 4-0 to England, so don't know quite. I suppose once their campaign had reached a point of not having any point left to it in terms of trying to qualify, it was only likely they were going to take their foot off the gas a little bit and sort of be more affected by the occasion of having, you know, England as a big football nation coming to play them as a newly independent nation. Or newly recognised independent nation for the first time. So I guess there was a lot of other things going on in that. And, you know, also added to by the fact that obviously the British Army, as part of international peacekeeping, whatever, was involved in helping to secure, in a way, their long-term independence. But let's not open up that whole can of worms, because I'm sure you've heard other perspectives on the same story.
A lot of them.
Yeah. We'll save that for a special Balkans pod.
That would be a fun one.
I think I'd have to get some other people on and just be referee for that one. So the last thing I wanted to finish with, just before we call it a day for today, is obviously Ian Wright is in the jungle.
I have seen that. I have no idea what that reality show is about or anything, so please.
Well, I can't say I've seen any of this particular edition. I remember watching a bit of one series about 10 years ago when it was like a new thing. A bit like when Big Brother first started, you know, watch the first series of that. And then obviously when people started using it just as ways to boost their careers. But it's kind of weird because you sort of wonder why Ian Wright's doing it, really, because, and you know, there's a couple other people on there as well, like a morning TV host and Caitlyn Jenner, and people are kind of like, well, they've already got like really big profiles and they're already working quite a lot. You know, for some of the others who are kind of like recently retired this or out of favour that, you're like, well, yeah, of course it makes sense to get yourself on the telly. But you're just sort of wondering, why is he doing it? Is it just because, like, it's Ian Wright and he's up for a bit of a laugh? I don't know.
Wasn't Harry Redknapp there last
time? Yes, which was sort of... But I mean, I suppose at least Harry had sort of retired and therefore was just doing it as a bit of a jolly, I think.
But maybe the producers are, you know, expanding their audience and attracting football fans as well. So.
Well, possibly. They've got an ex-England rugby player on there. who, so Christ only knows. I really don't know quite what to say about it because I haven't watched the programme. I'm not going to watch the programme, not out of any great intellectual snobbery, although there's probably an element of that, but more down to the fact that I just haven't got the time. I get to watch barely any telly at all at the moment, and when I am, it's just trying to catch up on the bits of box sets I'm miles behind my girlfriend on.
That's what I use the international break for, to catch up on TV shows.
Well, I had a lot of work on, I was actually being paid to act as an actor and everything. So, you know, when such things happen, you have to roll with them. Yeah, like earlier today, I was randomly doing ADR for a internationally successful TV program that I can't obviously mention because I'd be in trouble if I did. doing lots of like random background voices, which is just like, oh, okay. It's what, until I first did that a few years ago, I didn't even know that was like a thing. So it's you know, the funny little things you can find out. Anyway, I'm just talking now, and I've stopped talking about Arsenal because literally, without dipping further into the pit of misery, there is no more Arsenal to talk about.
Finally. Yay.
Finally, Anita, you are free. You are free from your torture, at least until Saturday afternoon.
That sounds really bad. I will definitely be watching the match.
Well, of course you will.
You're nervous and hoping for the win. We'll smash them and everything. Well, that is just right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's misery.
You're an addict like me and all the listeners. Unfortunately, it's just how this thing works.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, well, here's hoping, listeners, that somehow we manage to pull some kind of positive result out of the bag from both games next week. And, of course, we'll talk again before the Frankfurt game in the Europa League. By then, we'll have a better clear idea of where we are. And we'll also then be looking forward to the Premier League game away at Norwich with a newly returned to fitness Teemu Pukki. Hooray! but we'll try not to shit ourselves about that in due course. Not much else to say except for thanks again for listening. Thanks again for getting this far, if you've got this far. And, of course, do come back to us with any questions, any things you'd like us to dig into, at Daily Cannon on Twitter. That's at Daily Cannon on Twitter. We didn't have any questions this week, but we did have quite a few for the last couple of weeks, so we're not going to complain too much. But yes, the more weird, wonderful, or probing, the better. We love to hear from you. Nothing else to say except thanks again to Anita.
It was fun again, Matthew.
Liar! And again, thanks to you listeners. We'll be coming and speaking to you again next week, hopefully after Arsenal 3, Southampton 0, or something like that. Take care, everyone.
Bye.